I think to the tune of 11 different books in the Old Testament has to do with either the prophecy or or was written during the time of exile or was written about the time or just at the end of it. But so there's out of a total of 66 books in the Bible, 11 of them had to do with this exile. So must be pretty important. So we may start with the prophecy, and I realized overlooking it this morning that I left out a few of the verses that we might want to look at. But if y'all would, we'll try to use this as an outline. And if y'all would, let's go to the book of Jeremiah. We'll start there and see what we can find, if we can find the book of Jeremiah. It's in here somewhere. After Isaiah, I think. So let's start with the third chapter. And y'all can pencil this in on your sheet, or maybe I can get it updated in a week or so after we try to correct all the mistakes. And if you'll notice, I didn't put my name on this. So if it gets handed out, due to all the errors that may be in it, I'm not liable. But Jeremiah 3, and we're going to read 6 through 15. The Lord said also unto me in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel had done? She has gone up upon every high mountain and under every green tree, and there hath played the harlot. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me, but she returned not, and her treacherous sister Judah saw it. And I saw, when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorcement. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. And it came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom that she defiled the land and committed adultery with stones and with stocks. And yet for all of this her treacherous sister Judah hath not turned unto me with her whole heart, but feignly, said the Lord. And the Lord said unto me, the backsliding Israel has justified herself more than treacherous Judah. Go and proclaim these words towards the north, and say, return thou, backsliding Israel, saith the Lord, and I will not cause my anger to fall upon you, for I am merciful, saith the Lord, and I will not keep anger forever. Only acknowledge thine iniquity, that thou hast transgressed against the Lord thy God, and hast scattered thy ways to the strangers under every green tree. And you have not obeyed my voice, saith the Lord. Turn, O backsliding children, saith the Lord, for I am married unto you, and I will take you, one of a city, and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. And I will give you pastors according to mine heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. So that's referring to Israel, which has already been taken captive. The Assyrians had already taken them, and that was part of the that was the 10 tribes that wouldn't be heard of after this. They wouldn't reunite. And the two tribes that'd be left would be Judah and Benjamin. Some of that we'd studied before, but this is God saying this through the prophet Jeremiah. Talked about Israel and that bill of divorcement, but didn't do that to Judah there. So we'll go ahead and we'll go to our next place there in Jeremiah as far as the prophecy goes. Turn to page chapter 24. 24, we're going to read 1 through 10. And the Lord showed me, and behold, two baskets of figs were set before the temple of the Lord. After that, Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away captive Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and the princes of Judah, with the carpenters and the smiths from Jerusalem, and had brought them to Babylon. One basket had very good figs, even like the figs that are first ripe, and the other basket had very naughty figs, which could not be eaten. They were so bad. Then said the Lord unto me, what seest thou, Jeremiah? And I said, figs, the good figs, very good, and the evil, very evil. They cannot be eaten, they are so evil. Again the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah, whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldees for their good. For I will set mine eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land, and I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up, and I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord. And they shall be my people, and I will be their God, for they shall return unto me with their whole heart. And as the evil figs which cannot be eaten, they are so evil, surely thus saith the Lord, so will I give Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and his princes, and the residue of Jerusalem that remain in this land, and them that dwell in the land of Egypt. And I will deliver them to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth for their hurt, to be a reproach, and a proverb, a taunt, and a curse in all the places whither I shall drive them. And I will send the sword, the famine, and the pestilence among them, till they be consumed from off the land that I give unto them and to their fathers. So again, this is God saying this to Jeremiah, what's going to be done to the people of Judah. We're going to read another spot here in the next chapter, in 25, verse 9 through 12. Behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land, and against the inhabitants thereof, and against all these nations round about, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment, and a hissing, and a perpetual desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth, and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones, and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment. And these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass, when 70 years are accomplished, that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldees, and I will make it perpetual desolations. So that's, again, God telling, through Jeremiah, telling the people what's going to happen. This was a prophecy. This was before that had happened. One more place we're going to read in Jeremiah chapter 27, 6 through 15. And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and the beast of the field have I given him also to serve him. And all nations shall serve him, and his son's son, until the very time of his land come, and then many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of him. And it shall come to pass that the nation and kingdom which will not serve the same Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation will I punish, saith the Lord, with the sword, and with the famine, and with the pestilence, until I have consumed them by his hand. Therefore hearken not ye to your prophets, nor to your diviners, nor to your dreamers, nor to your enchanters, nor to your sorcerers, which speak unto you, saying, ye shall not serve the king of Babylon. So what he's saying here, this is part of their punishment. This is God chastising them, telling them through the prophet Jeremiah that you will serve this Nebuchadnezzar, you will submit yourself to Babylon, and if you don't, it's going to be trouble. So this is part of their chastisement. This is part of their punishment. They have to or supposed to do these things. So here in just a bit, when we go to reading about the last kings of Judah, we're going to know that a couple of them turn against God, and it makes him, or turn against Nebuchadnezzar, against Babylon. They think personally it's the right thing to do because they're the enemy. But God has let them know through Jeremiah it's their job. It's up to them to serve them, and this is part of their punishment. But therefore hearken not ye to your prophets, he says, nor to your diviners, nor to your dreamers, nor to your enchanters. So don't go to other men trying to find out the right thing to do here. God's already told you. Take your punishment and deal with it. And we'll start reading there in the 10th. For they prophesy a lie unto you to remove you far from your land, and I should drive you out, and you should perish. But the nations that bring their neck under the yoke of king of Babylon and serve him, those will I let remain still in their own land, saith the Lord, and they shall till it and dwell therein. So if you would submit yourself to Babylon, I'll leave you there in this country, in your land. But we're going to find that most of them don't. And I spake also unto Zedekiah, king of Judah, according to all these words, saying, bring your necks under the yoke of the king of Babylon, and serve him and his people, and live. Why will ye die, thou and thy people, by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence, as the Lord hath spoken against the nation that will not serve the king of Babylon? Therefore hearken not unto the words of the prophets that speak unto you, saying, you shall not serve the king of Babylon, for they prophesy a lie unto you. For I have not sent them, saith the Lord, yet they prophesy a lie in my name, that I might drive you out, and that ye might perish, ye and the prophets that prophesy unto you. So that's a couple of different spots there in Jeremiah, and I know that's a lot of reading, but we want to get this understood, that God gave them warning. They knew what was to come if they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And we've read here in the multiple places in Jeremiah of these things to come and what they're supposed to do. Now we're going to read some of the prophecy of Isaiah concerning Cyrus, the king of Persia. So this is talking about or just letting you know that several hundred years, I think up to the tune of 200 years before it happened, that Isaiah is going to prophesy the man's name that's going to redeem him. And his name being Cyrus. So let's go to that and understand that. Go to the book of Isaiah in the 44 chapter, 26 through 28. That confirmeth the word of his servant, and performeth the counsel of his messengers, that saith to Jerusalem, thou shalt be inhabited, and to the cities of Judah thou shalt be built, and I will raise up the decayed places thereof, that saith to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up thy rivers. That saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. Can y'all hear us? I think we're back on again, maybe. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. So we read there in the prophecy of Isaiah on 44. Now go to chapter 45. We'll read the first verse there. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two levied gates, and the gates shall not be shut. And reading also in the fifth verse, I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. So that, again, that's the prophecy of Isaiah concerning the coming of the Cyrus, the king of Persia. And now we're going to read a little bit in the book of Daniel. And we're going to try to understand some of these other prophecies and some of these visions that Daniel might have seen and try to make heads or tails of that. So go to prophecy of Daniel, Daniel chapter 8. We'll be reading 3 through 4. Almost there. Boy, it's hard working with one hand in this wind. 8:3-4. All right. Almost there. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river. That's all right, bud. You ain't got to stand there and hold me. That's all right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Maybe we'll get settled here. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high,
but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. And I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. Now what Daniel is seeing here, we appreciate them putting this in the writing, that you can turn over there to verse 21 in chapter 8, and it'll tell us what this means. And there in the, in the 20th verse, it says, "The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia." In the 21st, "And the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king." So what they were talking about, the ram that came up with the two horns, when that was first mentioned, it was that was meaning the Media and Persia, and they said the second would be higher than the first, meaning the Persians would be higher than the Medians. So these are two different groups, but yet they're kind of they're combined at this time. You had the Medes, as they were referred to, and you had the Persians. And we'll find that one was a king over the Medes here in just a bit. And then just right after that, the Persians take over with not really a fight or anything there to go about. The Persians just took over that reign in this area. So a lot going on there to understand that. But then, interesting enough, there in the 21st, it talks about the rough goat that came after them, the king of Grecia. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. And that first king, we'll later find out, is referring to the Alexander the Great. So we may get into Judah being removed. That's about the majority of the prophecy that we wanted to get into studying this. Again, appreciate everybody being here, and appreciate Brother Jeff's ability to preach with all of this going on. It's something else. Keep your hands on all of this and keep your mind where it needs to be and stuff like that. But in 2 Kings, we may turn over there in just the next little while. We may talk about the last few chapters of Kings, or 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. Y'all want to turn back to 2 Kings there. We may start with that to start with. Too far away. 2 Kings, chapter 17, 18 and 19. And some of this is, I've tried to put it in line to where it best fits, and I know sometimes I double back and we might hit some of the same scripture, but I want to kind of just lay this out with Judah to be removed, and how it was written here in 2 Kings that matches the prophecy of what was said here just before. So 2 Kings chapter 17 and 18 and 19, "Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight, and there was none left but the tribe of Judah only. Also Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel which they had made." So Judah's already seen what's to happen. And Judah still doesn't change their ways after seeing what happens to Israel. Now, in 2 Kings chapter 20... is another confirmation. Chapter 20, verse 17. "Behold, the days come that all is in thine house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried into Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord." So this was saying what was going to happen when Babylon came in, and this is the days coming as to when this was going to happen, that they were going to carry everything in to Babylon. And then 2 Kings chapter 21,
12 through 16. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, Behold, I am bringing such evil upon Jerusalem and Judah that whosoever heareth of it, both his ears shall tingle. And I will stretch over Jerusalem the line of Samaria and the plummet of the house of Ahab, and I will wipe Jerusalem as a man wipeth a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. And I will forsake the remnant of mine inheritance and deliver them into the hand of their enemies, and they shall become a prey and a spoil to all their enemies. Because they have done that which was evil in my sight and have provoked me to anger since the day their fathers came forth out of Egypt, even unto this day. So this is God explaining as to why he was doing these things. Moreover, Manasseh shed innocent blood very much till he had filled Jerusalem from one end to another beside his sin wherewith he made Judah to sin in doing that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. So because the children had done evil, it says here, since the time they came out of Egypt. And then Manasseh just put the top right on the cake there and finished it off, and God was tired of dealing with him. He showed mercy after mercy after mercy, brought in good kings, brought in good people to help out. And you'd notice if you read through mostly 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, and if you were to list out all these kings, and what you're going to find is beyond. After Solomon, there was 19 kings of what you'd say Israel, and there'd be 19 kings of Judah, and actually one queen in that of Judah. And for the majority of all of them, you're going to find that they were all evil, except for just a couple of three of them on each side along the way. But they just refused to do what the Lord had told them to do. I think we could all learn a lot from that. We may read one other place in 2 Kings in chapter 23 and 26 through 27. Notwithstanding, the Lord turned not from the fierceness of his great wrath wherewith his anger was kindled against Judah because of all the provocations that Manasseh had provoked him withal. And the Lord said, I will remove Judah also out of my sight, as I have removed Israel, and I will cast off this city, Jerusalem, which I have chosen, and the house of which I said, My name shall be there. So even he'd said, My name will be in this house there in Israel, but I'm going to cast them off. And that's exactly what he is to do. So this next part, as we start getting into it, this is what we've titled as the Babylonian reign. So this is where the Babylonians come in. And we wanted to try to learn along the way maybe what kings were there and present. Maybe what other books of the Bible would be involved. And maybe some of the other people. So we might get into that here in just a little bit. Brother Jeff, I'm trying to keep my tab on the time. I figure we'll try to break loose about 15 till this morning, give us time to get set up and stuff like that for church. But we'll try to keep an eye on that, or maybe somebody just holler at me or whatever else. But as always, y'all jump in. If there's anything the Lord leads you to do, just we'll do that first and foremost, and we can get caught up on some of this stuff later on. The book of 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, the last few chapters, discuss the last few things of Judah and the entrance of Nebuchadnezzar. And if you'll notice, back when we was reading a couple of places there in Jeremiah, he was referred to as Nebuchadrezzar. So just adding in an extra letter there or so, but it is the same man. Just let that be known. Spelling errors, as we might would refer to them, but it's more or less how our English language, then going back into various different languages for sure that had been translated along the way, it was more of a miscopy more so than an error. So I like that verbiage more so because it's not necessarily an error. It's just how that our English language maybe has put it in the King James Version. Maybe just a couple of more letters needed in our alphabet compared to theirs. But that's definitely the same person we'd read about back in Jeremiah 25 and 9. But another thing to mention, the last kings of Judah, Josiah being the last good king, he was killed in a battle of Egypt and Assyria, and he went to help the Assyrians. And we can read this. You actually pick this up in the 23rd chapter of 2 Kings, whenever it talks about this king. And it says here in the 28th, we'll say the 23rd chapter, 28th verse of 2 Kings, 23rd chapter, 28th verse. I might have misspoke. Now the rest of the acts of Josiah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Judah? In his days, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up against king of Assyria to the river Euphrates. So keep in mind where Egypt is. Egypt is down south. They would come through the land of Israel. All the way up to the north of them would be Assyria. So you got Egypt riled up against Assyria. And it says that they went to the river the Euphrates. They refer to that as the Great River. And the king Josiah went against him, and he slew him at Megiddo when he had seen him. And his servants carried him in a chariot dead from Megiddo and brought him to Jerusalem and buried him in his own sepulcher. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, the son of Josiah, and anointed him and made him king in his father's stead. So this king, Jehoahaz, after Josiah had went to fight the Assyrians with the Egyptians, Josiah was killed. The people made Jehoahaz the king. But let's see what happens after that. Jehoahaz was 23 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father had done. And Pharaoh Necho put him in bands at Riblah, in the land of Hamath, that he might not reign in Jerusalem, and put the land to a tribute, or like a gift, of 100 talents of silver and a talent of gold. And Pharaoh Necho made Eliakim, the son of Josiah, king in the room of Josiah, his father, and turned his name to Jehoiakim, and took Jehoahaz away, and he came to Egypt and died there. So the people had named this king. This is the first place that we see that Judah is not in power. They're not in control of what they want done in their own land. What we see here is a Egyptian king that has enough influence in this area that he can take one of their pronounced kings out of position, and he appoints his own king, which was one of the sons of Josiah, but then he changes his name. So, I'll be honest with you, this was all new to me. I didn't realize this before, and I hope y'all are getting something out of this. But God had told them, He had showed them that He was kind of opening the hedge up, if you will, allowing these people to come in and do with them what they wanted. And that's exactly what happened here. So you got this Egyptian Pharaoh that came in. Yep, we don't want your king. We're going to have our own king, or I'm going to put a king in that I want, and then even change his name. So the Egyptians done this first, and Jehoiakim gave the silver and the gold to Pharaoh, but he taxed the land to give the money according to the commandment of Pharaoh. So even the Egyptians at the time didn't want to take on the land and all the headaches and all the people that went along with it. They just wanted the revenue from it. So that's what was going on here. The Egyptians was going to get the tax money at this time from this land of Israel, which was full of great wealth. And in the 36th, Jehoiakim, I may not have finished the 35. Let me back up on that. And Jehoiakim gave the silver and gold to Pharaoh, but he taxed the land to give the money according to the commandment of Pharaoh. He exacted the silver and the gold of the people of the land, of every one according to his taxation, to give it unto Pharaoh Necho. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Zebudah, the daughter of Padaiah of Rumah. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his fathers had done. In his days, this starting the 24th chapter, in his days Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant 3 years, then he turned and rebelled against him. And the Lord sent against him bands of Chaldees, and bands of the Syrians, and bands of the Moabites, and bands of the children of Ammon, and sent them against Judah to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord, which he spake by his servants, the prophets. Surely at the commandment of the Lord came this upon Judah to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he did, and also for the innocent blood that he shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood which the Lord would not pardon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the king of Judah? So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin his son reigned in his stead. So we may bounce over real quick after being introduced to Jehoiakim, and Nebuchadnezzar had came in and ended up overtaking Jehoiakim because Jehoiakim, what the Lord had told him, you were supposed to serve Babylon. If you'll do what you're supposed to do, take your punishment, you can stay there. But you're going to see that this was one that turned against him after a few years. And just so we understand some of the other things that may be going on or is going to be happening at this same time, turn over to the book of Daniel, and we'll read the first chapter and the first couple of verses there. So when we think about all that Daniel had went through and all the kings that he may have dealt with, it started just as soon as Nebuchadnezzar came in and overtaking Judah. Because it says here in the first chapter and the first verse, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of gold, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of God, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and the king's seed of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldees. So what this was showing us here in the book of Daniel and a whole lot more was taken in this first year. This first year would have been anywhere between 605 B.C. to 608 B.C., somewhere in there, depending on the discrepancy of what timeline you're looking on, but a lot of folks will say 605, some will say 608. But that's what's happened here. When you're reading in 2 Kings and you read about Jehoiakim, just know that this is when the book of Daniel started. Now, the book of Daniel is going to go over various different kings of the Babylons and the Medes and the Persians. And Daniel had to live through a lot of changes. And maybe we can bring some of that out here in the near future as well. But again, this was just setting up the time frame. There's a total of three exiles, as most folks will refer to it. This is the first, when Nebuchadnezzar first came in and took over and overtaken Jehoiakim. So we might read a little bit more now that Jehoiakim has passed and his son Jehoiachin takes over. We'll read here in the 24th chapter, 2 Kings, 7th verse. And the king of Egypt came not again any more out of his land,
for the king of Babylon had taken from the river of Egypt unto the river Euphrates all that pertained to the king of Egypt. So not only did Babylon come in and take over Judah, but it took over Judah all the way down through what would have been old Israel, all the way down to the river of the Egyptians, and the Egyptians no more come into that land. This was Babylonian land. They've overtaken it. This is theirs. The Egyptians would no more be getting the taxation money from it. The Babylonians wanted the same thing the Egyptians did. They wanted the revenue. They didn't want to... They didn't want the headache that came with it. They were going to allow them, hey, if you'll just stay there, do your thing, send us taxes, that's all they wanted. So in the 8th verse, Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months, and his mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father had done. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city, and his servants did besiege it. So here, just a few chapters later, we see that Nebuchadnezzar came up and had to besiege it from Jehoiachin. He's already been there once for Jehoiakim, and this, when he besieges this, this is what's going to be the portion of the second exile. What we don't see there is the time frame in between the first and the second. Some believe that to be somewhere around 7 to 8 years difference in between these kings at this time. And in the 11th, and Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city and his servants and did besiege it, and Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother, and his servants, and his princes, and his officers, and the king of Babylon took him in the 8th year of his reign. Notice there in the 12th, it says in the 8th year of his reign. So that time frame matches up. If you go from 605, then now this would be 597 as to when this would be happening, 597 B.C. And he carried out thence all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which Solomon, king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. And he carried away all Jerusalem, and all the princes, and all the mighty men of valor, even 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained save the poorest sort of the people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiachin to Babylon, and the king's mother, and the king's wives, and his officers, and the mighty of the land. Those carried he into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. And all the men of might, even 7,000, and craftsmen and smiths, 1,000, and that were strong and apt for war, even then the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon. And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, his father's brother, king in his stead, and changed his name to Zedekiah. So now we've got our first it was Pharaoh out of Egypt, appointed the man that he wanted and changed his name. Well, now we've got Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, coming in, taking over, and he's appointing the king that he wants and changing his name. So these are kings that would have been allowed at the time. He even allowed the same bloodline to follow. These are proper blood lineage men that are being chosen. So that's one thing to note as well. Again, they didn't want to disrupt. They didn't want there being these people upset. They wanted them to carry on and just provide the taxation, in which that's what God had told them as well. If you'll serve them, I'll leave you in your land. But Zedekiah in the 18th was 20 and 1 year old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah, until he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. So now we've got another king of Judah that has rebelled against Babylon. That's a no-no. Wasn't supposed to do those things. And this would be This would be the end of them. This would be the starting of the third exile. Somewhere around 586, I think it was, just off the top of my head. Somewhere in that B.C. as to when that would happen. So we might be at a good stopping point there for the morning. And we might try to wrap up. I know this is a lot of information this morning, but trying to understand where what happened and who was appointed who and how the Egyptians first came, and then it was the Babylonians, which was how it was supposed to be. And we've talked enough about how they were supposed to do what the Lord had told them to do and submit to Babylon for a time. It was referred to as 70 years. And as we get into the next few weeks, maybe we try to understand that 70 years a little bit better and where all they had to, where all they were brought into and what all's happened. But here through the 25th chapter, next week we'll get into the temple and all that being destroyed that was built by Solomon, all of its splendor. But it just goes to show, even with all of that, even it being God-led, God's already told them he's going to wipe them just like a dish, he said. Going to just clean them like a dish and wipe them right off. And he was going to cast them out over into Babylon, which is way to the east. We'll read later on in Ezra's writings that it was to the tune of 4 months travel from where Israel would have been to where they would have been in Babylon. But anyway, we sure do appreciate everybody coming out this morning. Hope I hadn't made too big of a mess of it. And y'all definitely pray for Brother Jeff when it's his time to get up here in just a little bit. It's a struggle. It's a struggle. But y'all consider yourself dismissed this morning. Thank you.